This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on July 16th, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The following matter, item number 8 that I previously called, we have before us Adav Noti, Theodore Lutz, and Robert Knopf of the Office of General Counsel. Would you please, Mr. Lutz,
sure,
go forward with a discussion? Thank you.
Thank you again, Chair Ravel. At the May 21st open meeting, the Office of General Counsel was asked to assess how and whether the public could participate in the Commission's consideration of AOs at open meetings. Accordingly, Agenda Document 15-37-A summarizes existing AO procedures, identifies potential benefits and drawbacks of allowing third parties to appear before the Commission at open meetings, and outlines a proposed procedure for such appearances should the Commission allow them. Thank you. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. I know we also received, just I note for the record, a letter with respect to this matter from, I don't have it right in front of me. I believe it was Democracy 21 and the Campaign Legal Center as well. Are there any questions or comments on this matter? So let me speak to the matter, because I was the initiating force behind this, and I think this is something that is really important, and that we have seen from our own experience that the Commission's deliberations, and we've been talking about thoughtful analyses of matters today, that our deliberations would be greatly aided by the ability of third parties to participate in providing information to us and discussion of the legal issues that are involved in opinion requests. Furthermore, I mean, I have to say, just as a general question, just as a general issue, the idea of having greater transparency of the work we do, greater participation of the public in the work we do, is a really important thing for us. And that is the what is going forward as in our government in general, at all levels, including at the federal level, is the ability for the public to have more meaningful input into governmental decision making that is going to be of some impact to the entire populace. And our AOs, as we know, are in some ways done well about specific facts, they have relevance to many other people who are interested in the kind of work that we do. And an example of why it is important for us to get other information, I know that you're talking in some ways in your memo about counsel for different parties that are interested in this, but what gave rise to this concern to me initially was when we were doing the number of AOs that had to do with Bitcoin, and one of them, even you mentioned it earlier, Commissioner Goodman, Revolution Messaging. And I recall specifically that one of the people from Revolution Messaging who was asking to be exempted from our rules, who said, "You all don't understand anything about technology, and you're essentially," what he said was, "you are making decisions in a vacuum." And I have to agree with him on that, and I agreed with him, and I agreed that that was the case in Bitcoin. With all respect to the Office of General Counsel, you did a yeoman-like job on it, but you're not exactly experts in the field. And so it's extremely important for us to have input. And I know you talked a little bit about the timing issue and the letter that we received from the commenter, I think makes a very good point. If you look at our agenda today, we had how many matters that were six matters that we had to vote to put on the agenda because there was they were not placed on the agenda with sufficient time to meet the statutory requirement for notice to the public. So it is impossible, I believe, for the public to be able to comment about these matters with so little time. It would be unfair and would essentially, your terminology, swallow up the rule if we were to require that they have put in a written comment within the time period and therefore would not be able to come forward before us and comment about a matter. So with that, I would say that On my part, of course, this was my suggestion to begin with, and I thank you for your memo. I thought it was very well considered and very helpful, but this is certainly something that I think the entire commission, in the interest of making much more well-considered decisions, should support. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with that. And my thinking really has evolved on this as I've seen how the commission used to work with AOs before we allowed people to come and talk to us at the table and how it's worked after. I think I was the first commissioner to actually suggest that we ought to afford an opportunity for the requesters to come in. This is before you guys even got here. I can remember we used to engage in bizarre sort of games of charades where the requester's lawyer would be sitting out there and we would need to confirm certain facts. And I can recall once with Jan Barron was sitting out in the front row and I would say things like, so I assume that the facts are X, and he would sit there and sagaciously nod. And, you know, there was, I can recall a time where we needed to confirm some facts. We had to call a recess so that our lawyers could go out in the hallway and talk to the requester and their counsel who were sitting right there in front of us and then come back and relay the information to us. And, you know, it was like a game of telephone. This obviously was not very efficient. And then there was the time when Don McGann, before he was a commissioner, was sitting out there and scrawled something on a piece of paper and raced it over to the secretary and slapped it on her desk and said, here's an ex parte comment that I want you to make copies and give to all the commissioners right now while they're considering it. So it's really been a very good thing for the commission to be able to engage directly with the requesters. And I think it really has enhanced our decision making. I also remember the Bitcoin AO where I actually had this colloquy with the lawyer, and he admitted that he didn't actually know that much about the technology and was not in a position to really give us the information that we need. So I agree with the chair that I had originally envisioned this process as a way that we could confirm facts. And I thought, well, the requester is really going to be the only person who's going to be in possession of the facts. So we don't really need to hear from anybody else if we just want to confirm the facts. But that assumption has not turned out to be true. There are times when we need facts from other people. And it's also become more of an opportunity for advocacy and for arguments on the law, because the requesters don't just, particularly when they come in with their lawyers, they don't just sit there and give us the facts. They actually, you know, effectively make an oral argument. And we do make important legal decisions in these AOs. As every one of them says in the boilerplate at the end, any person involved in any specific transaction or activity which is indistinguishable in all its material aspects from the transaction or activity with respect to which this advisory opinion is rendered may rely on this advisory opinion. So that's kind of a cumbersome way of saying that other people rely on the law that we make here. Sometimes I think they actually are not similarly situated with the requester. They shouldn't be relying on it, but people do. And as came up earlier today, when we were talking about the Newt Watch opinion, we do establish legal principles that carry on sometimes for years through the AO process. And I, in part because we often don't get drafts out late, and sometimes, you know, moments before the meeting, the drafts will be circulated. There would be no way for anybody on the outside to comment on that. Sometimes because issues come up in the course of the discussion where I think it really would be helpful to hear from people with a different perspective. I doubt if it would actually happen all that often. And I suspect that what would happen would be that when we were considering issues that have sort of more wide-ranging impact, we would occasionally get somebody like our friend Paul Ryan, who's sitting in the audience today from CLC, or I don't know who his counterpart is at CCP.
We've got Stephen Klein out in the audience
There you go. Well, maybe Stephen Klein would like to do that too. And I think that would be helpful. It would be helpful to me to hear from other experienced lawyers out there who are knowledgeable in the field, because I don't presume to know everything or to be able to think about every possible ramifications. I don't think our terrific staff even can say that they will, in all instances, always think of absolutely everything that could come up, every ramification, every possible consequence. I really think there's no downside to allowing people the opportunity to come in and have a few minutes to express their views. And I would personally find it very helpful to my decision making. I think there are instances where we're heading for a deadlock, where perhaps having an outside perspective would be helpful to resolving that deadlock and would help me to get to yes on a case where I had some reservations and might otherwise vote no. So for my colleagues who are more skeptical and think that maybe it wouldn't be so beneficial to them, I would ask you, again, in another exercise of collegiality, to consider the fact that some of us think it really would be very helpful to us. And I don't think, you know, we could give people time limits, you know, give them 5 minutes, whatever it is, so it doesn't drag out the process too long. But I do think, and as I said, it's my opinion has evolved on this. I didn't initially think this would be important, but I have come to think that it's very important and would be very beneficial and helpful to commissioners. And I think we can rely on people to be respectful of each other and not to, you know, attack the requester or be personal in their comments. And if they are, the chair can always silence them. So I don't think that's really a concern that we need to take into account. I strongly support our adopting a proposal like this, which I really do think would be very, very beneficial to our decision-making process.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, let me commend the Office of General Counsel for what I thought was an excellent memorandum. Mr. Lutz, Ms. Selenkoff, Mr. Knopp, Mr. Noti, and Ms. Stevenson. I think this was a very thorough and balanced, and it did an excellent job at laying out both the pros and the cons, you know, the benefits and the potential pitfalls of such a proposal. And I think it was an excellent piece of work, and I greatly appreciate it. In terms of in laying out the pros and cons, I could not at this time support a policy extending the appearance, the ability to appear before the Commission on Advisory Opinions to third parties. And my starting point on this is the statute in the section which was formerly 437F. I don't know what the new provision is, so I'll just refer to the old one. There's a provision, subsection B, built into it to specifically, I think, guard the advisory opinion process against the possibility of them turning into quasi-rulemaking proceedings. It says in B, any rule of law which is not stated in this Act or in Chapter 95 or Chapter 96 of Title 26 may be initially proposed by the Commission only as a rule or regulation pursuant to the procedures established in Section 438D of this title. So my concern is, is setting up a process which turns advisory opinions into a, like I said, a quasi-rulemaking process. And the cases that that were cited by Chair Ravel, the Bitcoin and Revolution messaging, I think actually, while on the one hand, certainly additional information on those would have been helpful, I think both of those were actual examples of where rulemakings in those arenas would actually be helpful, because then we could start considering larger and much broader considerations of policy and getting into the facts and how they would be applied broadly. But at that point, we go so far beyond the limited facts of the presentation that are set forth by an advisory opinion requester that I think that we are on the verge of running afoul of what the statute limits us to. I agree with what my colleague Commissioner Weintraub said about it. It would certainly be helpful, and I think that there are a lot of times when it's always helpful to have more information from more sources. But it's not really, in an oral argument in an actual case, you have two sides that have a concrete interest in the outcome. This would be, in many cases, if we set up a policy where third-party requesters could come in, you have the individual who has the concrete interest, who's setting forth specific facts about what they would like to do, and then someone else can kind of weigh in who doesn't necessarily have a concrete interest. And I'm not sure that providing that as kind of a matter of right, if we haven't crossed the line, we'd be getting, I think, awfully close to setting up kind of a quasi rulemaking procedure, and I wouldn't be comfortable with that. And I would worry that the requester would lose control of their own request, and they are entitled to be able to present to us the facts as they. And they can rely, and we rely on their presentation of the facts as accurate, and their protection only extends insofar as those facts are indeed the case. But in the interest of collegiality, I do think that there may be circumstances on a case-by-case basis where if someone wanted to submit a request where it actually would be, I think, helpful. I think one of the circumstances that I might, at least for me, kind of trigger an interest in concreteness is they cite to the cases involving preemption of state law. I think in those sorts of cases, the outcome has a very concrete impact on in that case, the state and their ability to enforce, or if we, depending on how we rule, not be able to enforce their laws. In that sort of an instance, I think that there may be a valid reason for the commission to allow a third-party commenter, because then it's not just just someone who wants to opine on the wisdom or the lack thereof of a particular proposal, but they are impacted in a very direct and significant way. And so I thought that was a very useful example that was put in there. And so I'm open to, and I can't conceive of all the circumstances off the top of my head where I think that where a third-party commenter being able to speak before the commission would be appropriate. But I would certainly, I'm open to kind of a case-by-case where the commission decides. I think that, as we often say, if there are four commissioners, we can declare that Thursday is Wednesday.
I don't think we can actually do that.
for our purposes. Well, we have meetings that...
right.
Yeah, we say that a meeting that happened... We keep executive sessions open for multiple days. So I think that where I am right now is I'm not prepared to support a policy that provides third-party commenters the ability to request on an open-ended basis. But I am willing to consider on a case-by-case basis if four more, if we can get a majority and allowing requesters, if the issue I think rises to the level where I think that we're not tripping that kind of threshold into entering into a quasi rulemaking. And like I said, that one example I thought was on the preemption issue.
Okay. I really appreciate that willingness. But I do say, sort of a caveat, and I also understand how you've narrowed it, but I would suggest that, unfortunately, sort of where we are with regard to rulemakings is we've had one, as I understand, of any significance in a number of years. And people actually do rely on these matters. And for example, in the Bitcoin case, it was said by one of the commissioners right after that that it was applicable to all contributions. I mean, it was in the Wall Street Journal. So I think even the commissioners are utilizing our AO decisions as to indicate that there's, you know, sort of an open kind of rule that is impacting others. And I'm not saying that was inappropriate, because the fact is that on some of these technology issues in particular, but in other matters as well, they do have consequential ramifications for everyone. And you don't have to have the exact same fact pattern of what kind of a entity you are to have those consequential impacts. For example, about issues of internet disclaimers or issues of, you know, other kinds of technology that could be usable. So I would hope that if we ask counsel perhaps to come back with another policy, which is, I assume you'd be amenable to that. Or did you want to just do it ad hoc?
I mean, if you sought to request, I wouldn't support a motion to do that. But obviously, you could always request, if you wanted counsel to draft a proposal. I'm not going to say you may not do that.
No. I understand. I'm just trying to figure out how we can go forward.
Yeah, and you know, if you were to, you know, I would not foreclose any of my colleagues from seeking to try to craft policies that you think that might address, you know, each other's concerns and then make a run at us. That's always permissible. But at this point, just in my looking at it, I'm probably at this point only comfortable with kind of an ad hoc basis of if someone wants to make a request to the commission, and which I think they can do anyway, if they wanted a request to be able to testify before the commission, you know, and if, you know, if we had four votes to do that, I'd be willing to consider their request and consider whether I thought that was appropriate in light of the nature of the request, and also, but also in light of what I think is a limit on what we can do in the advisory opinion process. But that's as far as I'm willing to go at this particular point.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
So I want to be very clear on this point. So what you're suggesting, because people are listening and they may be interested in trying to avail themselves of this, is that if somebody out there feels that they would like to address the commission on an AO, that they should send us a letter and make that request, and somebody could make a motion at the table to allow them to appear, and then if there are four votes, they can. And I mean, it's going to be awkward for people, because they're going to have to know whether to show up or not. For folks who are local, that's easy. For folks who are not local, that might be a little bit harder for them.
Right. I think under our current procedures, that's already permitted. I mean, we had, well, I think it was the last open meeting, we had a counsel for one of the audited committees who'd made a request to speak, and none of us said that we didn't think.
Well, I said I thought we needed a procedure, you may recall.
Right.
I actually.
But we agreed on, I don't remember if it was without objection or if we actually made a motion on that, but we allowed him to speak, but we weren't established, and he was well within his rights. He wrote to us and said, I want to speak. We didn't conclude that he had a right to, but we allowed him to speak. And so I don't think that there's anything, I think within our current way in which we operate, if someone wants to make that request, but at this particular point, I don't think I couldn't give them any promises. If they wanted to make such a request, and they, but before, you know, let's say they were going to come in from the West Coast, it would probably be wise for them to get a sense of where the commission is.
But I don't know how they would get that.
Get a cheap flight.
And I actually do think it's important for us, and this is why I had some concerns in that particular instance. You know, everybody should be on the same playing field. If this is something that we're going to afford people, then it should be something that is at least theoretically available to anybody who wants. Doesn't mean that we would say yes every time, but everyone should know that it's possible for them to ask and that might be granted. I mean, that was my concern about that particular instance, that I was concerned that other people would read our regulations and say, oh, it doesn't look like I have the opportunity to appear, so I'm just not going to show up or make that request. I think we need to be clear with people so they'll know to make the request.
Right. I mean, the way I view it for myself is that I think that the number of cases where I think would be appropriate is probably pretty narrow, and I think I probably indicated that in the statement, you know, in what I just said. Speaking for myself, I wouldn't envision, just under the circumstances as I currently understand them and as I've seen things applied, I wouldn't envision granting that request very frequently. I think the advisory opinion process is about the requester, and obviously anybody can write in, and we often do get comments about drafts and comments about requests, and those are often very helpful. And as part of that, if they wish to make that request, that's fine. But I wouldn't envision myself granting it very often. But I think that, but I don't want to also foreclose circumstances where I think it may be appropriate for us to hear from a third party.
So I guess what people who are listening should take from this is that if somebody wants to have that opportunity, they should ask for it. And if there's at least one commissioner who thinks they ought to have it, somebody may make a motion at the table, which may or may not get 4 votes.
I think that that's, I think under our own procedure, I think that's already available. I don't think that we...
I just want to comment, because I did, speak to the issue that was raised in the letter that we received with respect to this matter today, that is a sort of increasing source of frustration to me, which is, and this is not, at all due to any negligence on the part of the Office of General Counsel. This has to do with the commission itself, but we often do not have blue drafts that are about these requests, these AO requests, until the day before of a meeting. And that makes it for an AO.
Sometimes the day of.
Or sometimes the day of, which makes it absolutely impossible for the public to be able to write in those comments. And I believe that is in derogation of the open meeting rules and the public notice rules that exist, and also preclude them from being able to provide us with that thoughtful information that might help us in making decisions. So, I appreciate your position, and I'm obviously that's your right and your view, but essentially what we have set up for people is a system where it's impossible for them to weigh in on decisions that are really important for this community that is interested in political issues. And I think that is really sort of an abdication of our obligations to the public that we serve.
I would just add on the issue of timeliness. I think that we have gotten a lot better in terms of getting initial drafts out there. Now, there's the difference between a draft. I think OGC has done a very good job at getting drafts up to us so that we can consider these things in a timely manner. Now, then the issue becomes what goes blue then? If we're satisfied with the draft, then we can make it blue. If we like the recommendation, but we feel like the analysis needs to be changed, that then falls on us. But I think one thing I think is that is difficult to always avoid is that as drafts go public, as we get comments back, and then as there's kind of a back and forth between offices, I think it's in some ways it's kind of baked into the cake that there's going to be some, in many cases, not in all cases, but in some cases, there's going to be some last minute drafting and negotiating, if for no other reason than sometimes we come to the table and have to kind of on the fly, negotiate with each other, sometimes in light of what we learned from Requester. So I just want to state that I certainly understand that we want to give as much time for people to comment as possible, but I don't want to make it appear as if I think council isn't doing their job and getting us initial drafts and getting something on paper for us, and also that that there's something untoward about the fact that we do negotiate to try to reach a consensus before meetings.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with that entirely, and that's exactly why it would be beneficial to allow people to come in and comment, because we do come up with last-minute solutions and fixes, and that's a good thing for us to try and work together and say, well, okay, what if we change this phrase, and what if we change that phrase? And, there have been those times when the meeting start was delayed because two commissioners were out in the hallway, red-penciling something and trying to come up with some language that might work to get four votes, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing for us to do that. It's a good thing for us to be trying up until the very last second to try and get an agreement rather than fail to agree. I think everybody benefits by that. But given that that is baked into the process, as you say, that is exactly why it would be beneficial to be able to have, I'm repeating myself, the benefit of other people's thoughts before we take that vote, in case, as we're doing that last-minute scramble, we're missing something. Because, as I said, I don't assume that I'm going to think of everything, and somebody else who's sitting there coolly just sitting in the audience might say, you guys didn't think of this, and there's no way for them to communicate that to us. And it might indeed be something that we all say, head smack, uh-oh, we didn't think of that, and we should have. We're just denying us, ourselves, the opportunity to improve our product.
All right. Are there any other comments? Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you. I believe that the example that we were just discussing a few minutes ago was Mr. Dan Backer, who was here about an audit. And he was the lawyer for the committee being audited. So in my mind, that was more akin to the requester of an AO wanting to speak about the request and less about a third party who wasn't directly involved. So I didn't have any concern allowing the lawyer for the audited committee to speak to the commission. I think that what's sort of before us today is very different than that, and I agree with much of what the vice chair has said. This, I think, allowing third parties to come up and speak to AOs would turn it more into a rulemaking process, which of course is prohibited under the statute. And as pointed out in the memo from the Office of General Counsel on page 4, advisory opinion request must relate to, quote, a specific transaction or activity that the requesting person plans to undertake. It may not pose general questions of interpretation or pertain to the activities of third parties. The process is for requesters, and requesters are coming to the commission and saying, hey, I'd like to do this, and I need to know from the commission if it's permissible under campaign finance law and regulation. And as I think if we looked at the stats here, we would find that the number of advisory opinion requests have gone down over recent years, and I think part of that is because it's not an easy thing to come here and try to get four votes from this place. And I think adding another layer to the mix will discourage people from requesting advisory opinions. And I think that's the last thing we want to do, because we've often said, I've heard, in the enforcement context, sometimes people will say in closed meetings, well, this person could have just come in and asked for an advisory opinion. Why didn't they do that? Well, because it takes a lot of time and money, and there's no guarantee that you're going to get four votes for anything. And I think adding this layer to the mix would make it even less likely that people would come in and ask us to sign on to something before they engage in that conduct.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
The only thing I would say in response to that is maybe we could try it as a pilot project and see. I mean, some commissioners are convinced that it would discourage people. I hear that. Others of us are less convinced that it would actually discourage people, but we could try it with a sunset provision and see whether we think after trying it, it's helpful, it's not helpful, it's discouraging people, it's not discouraging people. The fact that advisory opinions have declined, I think, is because people don't have a lot of faith in us, in our ability to get to four votes. That's why people are not asking. It's not, I think, because they're afraid somebody else is going to weigh in on their opinion and try and talk us out of it. And as I said, I actually think it would be helpful in getting us to four votes more often rather than less often, personally. So, but I think, you know, we could try it.
So would you like to make a motion?
I don't want to foreclose any. I don't know whether anybody else has any.
Well, is there any further discussion?
Is there a motion? I mean,
No, there isn't a motion.
We have an agenda document before us that has that kind of lays out options. I didn't know whether or not. I mean, if someone wanted to vote on, my thoughts I've expressed on this. I couldn't support a motion on that. But if someone wanted to make one,
In the interest, I've said this in other contexts. I don't want to ask our lawyers to spin their wheels and to start drafting something that has no chance of success. So the motion that I would contemplate would be that we direct the Office of General Counsel to, you know, taking into account all the concerns that were raised here at the table and all the views, that they take a crack at actually drafting a revised policy on advisory opinion procedure in accordance with the proposals that that they have suggested and in accordance with what we've talked about in the table. And while I wasn't originally contemplating this, I would be happy to incorporate some kind of an automatic sunset provision, try it for a year and see if we think it's working or if it's making things more difficult or it's making things more helpful. I think, you know, we've done that in other instances, and if it would make you happier, we could make it an automatic sunset so that it would take four votes to prolong it beyond that initial trial period. The question is, like, I don't want to ask them to do that drafting if you guys are already decided that there's no circumstances that you're going to be supportive of.
Well, that's a motion, and so we can tell by a vote.
Okay.
Right?
All right, I make that motion.
Okay, thank you.
Do you understand that?
You got that, Madam
Secretary?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. Any discussion on the motion? No. Commissioner Wall.
I have some trepidation about this without more. If you look at this, it says they have several concerns. I have several concerns, too. For maybe 30 years, we had an advisory opinion situation where the public can comment on an advisory opinion. It's a narrow question. It's anybody can ask us for an opinion. They don't have to have a lawyer, as we learned today. And we try and do the best we can with it. When I first got on the commission, I, like Commissioner Weintraub, realized that there were times when you just really wanted to ask the requester's lawyer if there was just one fact, you know. And so there was this little scurry out to the men's or ladies' room, and somehow they bumped into each other. So
it was an ex parte, Commissioner Walker.
Yeah, well, it was. But in any event, the year was chair. I did ask for us to reconsider.
Did you break the chair?
No.
Everybody's okay.
And so we did initiate a protocol whereby the counsel for the requester could actually come before us. And at that time, all that was to be permitted was to answer a question or two that we had generally about the facts so we could better understand it. Then, as time has gone on, we've gravitated from that to the point where the counsel automatically takes a seat and feels compelled to be in a position to argue the case. And then we went a little farther this morning, I think, when we got close to talking about how we can negotiate a yes, when maybe some of the commissioners already don't think that's the direction we ought to be going. And I think before we start doing this, we ought to look a little more careful about what we really want out of the advisory opinion process. I can see where a requester now, a poor little guy comes walks in and has a request, and the next thing you know, somebody's there with their counsel and somebody's calling in, and we have three people in the audience who want to speak, and they've written in already, and they may or may not have some expertise or particular axe to grind, and we're here all day trying to sort things out when all there was is a very narrow question. It has to be confined to a very narrow set of facts. So I have some trepidation about that until we think amongst ourselves about what we really want the general counsel to do rather than to have them make up an approach. Just my thought.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, I think we're probably trying to draw this to a close, but I just wanted to comment. Commissioner Walter's comments just triggered in my own mind an issue that I'd thought about earlier that that was also an issue of concern, and that's that well, even today we had kind of a technological innovation that was presented before us in an advisory opinion process, and I started thinking of hypotheticals. Well, what might happen when what if there's an upstart who wants to propose an innovative proposal as to I don't know. How to raise money in small amounts or so forth and give it to certain categories of candidates. But that cuts in on the business of maybe a more well-heeled player who has a large market share in whatever that market might be and has expensive let's assume that in the first instance, that the requester is doing it without counsel's help, and then a requester comes in, a third party comes in with, sophisticated counsel, lots of money and resources at their disposal, and you could imagine a case. I think what you were addressing is that could overwhelm the requester, and it could be used as a process for actually squelching or chilling or somehow preventing innovators from being able to get off the ground because people with opposing interests might want to come in and try to strangle that in the cradle. So I mean that is another concern about granting it on a just kind of as an as right basis that I have. But yeah, your concerns that you raise on that point just triggered that thought in my mind that I'd had previously.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I mean, obviously, we could put in a requirement that it has to get a certain number of commissioners to agree that it's appropriate to have that particular person come and address the commission. But, it could also work in the opposite way. We could have people who come in just, not dissimilar from one of our requesters today, who don't have a lawyer, they're doing it pro se, and, somebody who is in the election law community and knows a little bit more about it. The interactions between the law and perhaps new technologies and is up on all of the AOs in the process might decide to come in and be that person's white knight and say, I'd like to come and, try and flesh out the legal arguments why I think this guy's proposal is good and would be helpful. I think it could work in either direction, but as I said, we won't know unless we try.
All right. Call the question. There's a motion on the floor. Do you have that motion, Madam Secretary?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
I'm sorry. I voted no. I could have benefited from, there was a lot of discussion, so I forgot what the motion
was. We were going to direct counsel to draft up a policy.
No worries. Okay, so that motion fails. In favor, myself, Anne Ravel, and Commissioner Weintraub, and opposed, Commissioner Walter, Commissioner Goodman, Commissioner Hunter, and Vice Chair Peterson. Okay.